All right, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to UIWU. I appreciate you taking your time to join us today. Last week, we completed, although maybe none of us really knew that it was complete, but we finished with a series, a 15-part series on the 10 words, aka 10 commandments. And it just so happened, though I didn't really plan this, that as I finished with words number 9 and 10, I was surprised when I looked at the Torah schedule of annual cycle of Torah readings, and that was the week that the Torah portion in Deuteronomy, which covers the 10 words, was read. So it was a perfect transition. After some prayer and study and consideration as to what to do next, I've decided to do a brand new series beginning today, which I'll talk about in a moment. I did want to bring up that our United Israel World Union Jewish calendars for the year 5781 have come in. They are in my office, and so I'll be working this week to get ready to mail those out. So it's perfect timing. There was a little bit of delay because of COVID, and so I checked with them last week. I said, "Hey, look, we're pushing this. The Jewish New Year begins according to the Jewish calendar in September, and I really need these calendars." And so they said, "Well, we're working. We're trying to rush them through." They explained, and then last night while I was up here working, Bridget called and said, "Hey, you got two big boxes." So I had her open them up and discovered that they were the calendar. So I'm excited to send those out. All of you who are on our mailing list, if you received this calendar last year, I have you on the list. But if you moved, I don't know that. And if you have not sent me a new address, please send me that address. I'll update our mailing list and make sure that you get one of those. And if you're new to United Israel World Union and you've just come into the fold and you say, "You know, I'd really like one of those calendars," email me or Facebook message me, send a carrier pigeon, however it is that you can get in touch with me. Make sure I have your address and I'll be happy to send you one. Now, some have asked me, how much do these cost? And I'm pleased to tell you that there is no charge. There is a cost. We, United Israel World Union, purchases these in the past, actually, for the past 60 years. The same loving, generous family has donated these, and so we've been very blessed in that regard. This year, we did purchase the calendars, but there's still no charge. People are encouraged and welcome to contribute as they are able, but it is not necessary. All I need is your address, and I'll be happy to send you one. Okay, so that's the announcements out of the way. So I'm doing, beginning today, a series that I've titled Simply Torah. Not the Torah, not the Torah of Moses, not any, just Torah. And I've done this for a very specific reason. Because I want to talk about everything Torah. Now, you might say, "Well, you've been teaching the Torah for years," and this is true, but not like this. Because my intention in this series is to go where I've never gone before in a teaching series. I want to bring to light quite a bit that I've been studying for the past several years. Many of you may have been studying it as well. But I've had some close conversations with the key leaders within our organization, and I ask them. And all of the people that I talked to said, this group can handle this subject matter. It's not your traditional class series on the Torah, though there'll be some of that. But this is an in-depth, deep study of Torah. And we're going to get into some things that many people would dare not do. But I believe, and my fellow leaders within United Israel believe, that it's time. That it's absolutely time. And in a way, what I did with the 10 words class the 15 weeks prior to today, that was sort of a test run, if you will. I didn't really view it as a test run, but we were looking at textual inconsistencies, if you will. We were looking at the version of the 10 words in Exodus side by side with the 10 words from Deuteronomy, and we discussed, we talked about variants in the text. These are the kind of things that I want to do because really at its core, and people need to understand this, United Israel World Union, UIWU, is an educational outreach. Our purpose is to provide good, solid, informative, what we would call exegesis of the text. And it's not so much that we promote a particular orthodoxy, if you will, but we want to talk about the Bible. We want to get into the text of the Bible, and we believe that the group that we attract are like thinking, that you too are very up on your Bible, that you love the Bible, you are in love with the text, and you want to, you have tough questions. And a lot of people haven't answered your questions. And I believe, and James Tabor and Ralph Bunton and the Tylers and others in our organization, Timothy, I think all of us in the officer ranks, if you will, recognize that all of you are here because you're deep students of Scripture. So that's sort of an introduction to my class on Torah. Or an introduction, preparing you for my introduction, I should say. You see, I believe that this study on Torah is long overdue. It is long overdue, and I believe that for a lot of reasons. What we are witnessing in the world on the positive side, especially within the rank and file of fundamentalism, if you will, or religious people, let's call this group, within that group, there is a group that I would identify in the broad category of seekers. People who are searching deeply for truth. They have those tough questions that no one has been or has been able to or been willing to answer. And we believe that United Israel tends to attract this group of seekers, and we are pleased to provide you, hopefully, with some of the deeper questions first, and then some of the more difficult answers. So what I'm noticing, though, and I know you're noticing this as well, is around the world, we are witnessing what I would call, I guess, a broadly defined definition, aside from seekers, would be people who attach themselves to the broad label of Torah faith. Or they might say, I'm part of the Torah faith movement, although there's really no organization that has as its banner the Torah faith movement. You can't get a card for that Torah faith movement. But when I talk about this group of seekers who identify and orient their faith to Torah, this group is hard to label. I mean, there are people who are within fundamental branches of Christianity, people who consider themselves messianic or B'nai Noah, or perhaps they're more towards the side that we would collectively call Judaism. But this Torah faith movement is rather unique, and it is growing, and it is global. More and more people are waking up almost, I would suppose, on a daily, maybe even an hourly basis. And it oftentimes starts the same. It begins, people begin to be drawn to Torah because of study, because of a deep desire for answers and a close and careful study of Scripture. This group of seekers that identifies as Torah-oriented that didn't start there, because here's the thing that I want to bring up. I would venture to say, and I think most of you would agree, and I think further that this applies to all of you who are listening. Let me know if I'm wrong. But I would almost bet that most of you who are listening to me today did not begin your spiritual walk in a faith that was oriented towards Torah. I would bet that. I think that most of us, probably with few exceptions, most of us here today arrived at this place despite beginning our journey from a position that maintained a negative view of Torah. In other words, despite everything, you began a journey from a place that held a very negative assessment of Torah. Now, you probably, like me in the beginning, in the early steps, didn't even know the word Torah. When you held a negative view, I believe the place you were at probably referred to Torah, as you understand it now, by a term law. And you did that because you attached yourself to a philosophy or a religious tradition that was translating Torah through the lens of Greek, and it came through a word in Greek, nomos. And I'm not Greek, so it might be nomos, I'm not sure. But nomos is law. And most people got this idea that law, which we now know as Torah, was negative, that it was legalistic. And this is the place that you came from. I believe I'm speaking to everyone in the audience, and I think you all began there. You began with an understanding that your faith, which was apart from the law, was higher, that you were represented allegorically in a story found in the law, that your faith represented Sarah, and that the law represented Hagar. And therefore, those who are under the law, represented by Hagar, are a bondwoman, a slave, not free. This degrading contrast is what you began with. You began with this feeling of superiority, that you were above the law and not under the law. Most of you started there. You probably started in a place where the law was a temporary thing. It wasn't eternal. In fact, it was merely a tutor, something which helped a people reach a stage of maturity. Therefore, those who were under the law were in a place as children, as students. Certainly not elevated to a place of freedom, because you were a slave. This is the dichotomy that's presented. And furthermore, people told you not only was the law merely a tutor, but it was added for a very specific reason. The only reason, we're told, that the law existed, it was added because of sin. So there was an association, therefore, that the law was bad, it was negative, it was associated with sin. We were also told, I think I'm speaking for all of us, that the law was impossible to keep. I mean, it's too hard. You can't possibly keep the commandments. In fact, we were told, I think all of us were told, that only one was ever able to keep the law. The law was built in such a way, it was added because of transgression and sin. It was established to be a tutor. It was legalistic and binding. It put one in slavery in such a way that they recognized that they couldn't keep it. And furthermore, if one tried to keep it, if one even so much as attempted to live their life in such a way as to keep the Torah, they were in many ways attempting to earn one's salvation. Now recognize that not everyone fits into all of these, because some began their journey within various groups who were Christian, and yet they held a positive estimation of the Torah. So I don't want to leave that group out. But I'm talking about, generally speaking, for the most part, most people who are in Torah now began from a place where Torah was in a negative assessment. In fact, we were also told that it didn't make anything perfect anyway. I mean, if there could be a law that could do that, then of course you could. But there's not, you see. So it was presented in such a way as it didn't make anything perfect. In fact, it was not to be considered as a means of justification or righteousness. Those who seek to achieve righteousness through the law simply are in error. That's what we were told. Those who decided that they were going to attempt to live according to or under the law were told that they had fallen from grace. To live under Torah, to live under law, means that you've fallen from grace and probably are even trying this lifestyle because someone bewitched you or beguiled you, caused you to turn from life-giving faith to some beggarly elements where you think that you can somehow, by placing yourself in servitude, could achieve righteousness through your own works. But we know, we were told, that no one through their own works can achieve righteousness. It's just not possible. In fact, I was told that it went so far as to say that the law was a curse, or placed all under a curse. Now, some of this was things that people taught. Some of it's from a book that I formerly associated with. But nonetheless, the idea was that blessing comes through a spiritual life. Curse is attached to a life associated with law. The letter kills. The letter of the law kills, but the Spirit brings life. In fact, I even heard and read once about a ministry of death engraved on tablets of stone. Wow. By the way, speaking of words engraved on stone in a positive way, you can listen to a 15-part series, our previous classes. I think most of us were told that the law was already fulfilled anyway. And therefore, the law was no longer necessary, useful, but perhaps, if anything, it was even detrimental to one's walk. Think about how far this group has come. I mean, I'm not finished yet, but think about that. To come from the place that I've described thus far to a different view, it's a long way. Because we were even told that the law was passing away. It had instilled fear from the moment it was given, but that was passing away. That the Torah was done away with, abrogated, superseded, annulled. Anybody recognize any of these views? Of course you do. There are many more. But, and this applies to the most of the people that I talk to, and I'm blessed through modern technology, because I'm out there as a teacher to receive emails and Facebook messages and occasional phone calls, and I hear the same story over and over again, and I have heard the same story over and over again with slight variations for the past nearly 30 years. There are differences, of course, but quite often the story is the same. How do you go from a place where a very negative view of the law is instilled in you and you're a very firm participant in that viewpoint or that vantage point, and then all of a sudden something happens, which is very similar case to case, and you have a very positive view? You know how it happens? Almost without exception, people read a book. That's all there is to it. The seekers begin to really dig in. And they begin to find that their fundamentalist views that they were drawing from what they defined as Scripture, holy, inspired, authoritative, inerrant Word of God, they found problems. They found that there were discrepancies within the text that they held sacred, and it caused great turmoil. I think many of you can relate. A very troubling time, an internal struggle, if you will, would follow in almost every case. People who are seeking, who begin to find difficulties in what they believe to be the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God, as they begin to find difficulties and problems, they get into a very difficult place. Not only internally, not only with themselves, but they begin to have difficulties within the family unit, sometimes between a husband and wife, sometimes within parents and children, sometimes within a couple and their parents or their extended family or their friends. People have lost friends because they struggled with the search. The ghost of Inquisition's past still haunts the streets of the world. Now, I'm not even talking about anything beyond people who begin to find the truth. Now, you've heard my stand on this before. A lot of people who've come this way become attackers on those others that are searching, and I do not agree with that. I do not condone it. I think it is wrong, and I think it is evil. I think that we ought to be helpful. And I think that we ought to be sensitive to the people who have been in that place. Just like the Torah says, you know the heart of a stranger because you were a stranger. And I would bet that there are people listening to me today who've made this journey from a very negative assessment of Torah to a very, or negative assessment of law to a positive assessment of Torah. And now they have become the inquisitors of the day. Your behavior is not condoned by me, whether that matters or not. We have to be thoughtful of those, and we ought to be helpful because, as the Torah said, you ought to know how they feel. But the internal struggle that it produces in people who've come this way causes them to question a lot. How is it? How can we reconcile what was our fundamentalist belief with the textual evidence? And most of us successfully navigated that stream. And what we did, I've talked to a lot of people, what we did was we said, well, that was not accurate because it was discrepant when I compared it with this, and I followed the earlier model and I went with that. And I believed, this is what most people tell me, I ultimately reached the place where I said, if anything disagrees with what was said here, it can't be right. The two, never the twain meet. They simply don't go together. What we began to learn in this process, what we began to learn was that the Torah was holy and just and good and relevant and in effect. We even began to embrace certain terms such as eternal, because we had heard that it was passing, that it was done away with, abrogated, superseded, and annulled. But we didn't see that when we did our study of Scripture. We began to see things that said that certain elements, for instance, Shabbat, was eternal. And how could it be that something is eternal and then later it said that it's no longer valid? How could that be? The two don't go. So if God says, this is the way most people thought about it, if God says something is eternal, I remember countless discussions with people where I would say, how long is Le'olam? How long is forever? As we learned over the years, many of us, most of us, adopted more elements into our faith that we were more orienting towards Torah. We adopted Shabbat. We kept Shabbat as best we could. And we said, I'm a Torah observant person. I'm part of the Torah faith movement. I believe in the Torah. People are always saying, Torah, Torah, I'm Torah, I'm Torah. Many people adopted very soon into this journey the dietary rules. They quit, even though they were brought up in the South, like me. They gave up Jimmy Dean sausage and bacon and all of those mainstays of Southern cuisine. Pork chops, crawfish, shrimp, crab, catfish fries. All of those things people who were brought up in a culture that didn't even accept a positive view of Torah, gave up these things, and you ask them why. You're like, why would you not eat that? You know, the answer is almost always the same. Because the Bible says not to. And people would argue, and they'd say, but you're not under the law. We're not under the law. We're free. This fundamentalist view is still there. But the seekers have moved. The seekers have searched and therefore found. How many times in Scripture does it say, those who search for me with all their heart and all their soul will find me? And you know how we know who it is who's searching? Because we recognize what they found. And it's not like you can look out and say, oh, it's not race. It's not really even denomination. I meet Baptists and Catholics and Pentecostals and, you know, people from all faiths. People began to seek to follow the festivals outlined in Leviticus 23 and Deuteronomy 16 and elsewhere as best they can. You know, most people don't make the pilgrimage festivals, which are required according to Torah, but they keep the festivals. They do like some of us do. They set up a tent in their yard during Sukkot, camp out for 7 days. Neighbors think they're crazy. They go out in their yard in their neighborhood on the new moons and they blow the horn, the shofar. Dogs in the neighborhood love this especially. They hold Passover seders. More and more and more people are doing this. There are Baptist churches, Catholic churches, Pentecostal, Assembly of God. People all over the world are holding Passover seders and keeping other festivals. Now, I know there are people out there who have come this way who are very, very critical of those, which I mentioned a few moments ago, because they're not doing it right. Well, guess what? Neither are you. If you're in Iowa or Florida or Georgia, Louisiana, and you're keeping these feasts, you're not following the Torah either, so relax. I'm talking about people seeking and finding. They're wearing tzitzit. They didn't even know what tzitzit was a year ago. I have friends who make them, like Joanne makes some. But they didn't grow up in this tradition. People adopt language and culture that's foreign to them because of the search, because they found discrepancies from their previous walk to where they're at now. And they, many of these people, follow the weekly Torah portions and participate in weekly readings. We have a Hebrew Torah reading team that gets together every week and practices, and every Shabbat, people from all over the world read the Torah together in Hebrew. These people are from Australia and Singapore and Canada and the U.S. And I've been in Israel with friends from United Israel who are part of the Hebrew Torah reading team, and they'll get up at 3 a.m. You know, like they'll say, I got to go to bed. Why are you going to bed so early? I have to get up at 3 a.m. because I'm doing the Hebrew Torah reading team. And the time schedule is just, I mean, this person didn't grow up believing a Torah-oriented faith. This series is all about Torah. I think most have a general basic understanding now of the word. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going back. I wanted to give an introduction that sort of paved the way, because really what I want to do is I want to remind you from whence you came as we prepare to go further. Because let me tell you, the reason I'm doing this course, and get ready for this, is because many of us break through that initial realization that our fundamentalist views were wrong, and we say, I'm good now. Time to stop, because we're fearful of experiencing that again. I'm not going to let that happen. We're going to push further. I'm not going to go back so much and establish things that you already know. I'm going to take you to a place that you may have not considered in this course. I want to give examples from the Hebrew Bible. We're going to do on a bigger scale, in a more difficult way, in a more challenging way. We're going to look at things in the Torah as we did with the 10 words. We're going to notice differences between an account in one book of the Torah and an account in another book of the Torah. And we're going to discuss these things and we're going to ask the question, why is it? And we're going to seek to provide answers to that. We're going to consider traditional views of the Torah. Touch on that a little bit today in my introduction, because today is just an introduction. I'm telling you today, be ready for next week. Next week might be one of the most challenging classes that we've had. I believe you're ready for it. I believe that you got here because you desire to track down truth at all cost. You've already enlisted. You've already proven that you're willing to look at and make an assessment and be true to what it says. So we're going to consider the traditional view. We're going to consider that every jot and every tittle is inspired, authoritative, and so forth. But I'm also going to respectfully and carefully introduce you to the leading academic views in the world today. This is going to be, in my opinion, like a college class, but you're going to have as a textbook before your very eyes one book, the Hebrew Bible. And you're going to be forced, that might sound a little bit strong, but I'm going to show you things in the Hebrew Bible, and we're going to talk about why there are some issues, some questions. I'm going to talk about and teach over the course of this series on what is called the documentary hypothesis. And I'm not even suggesting at this point that Ross believes and signs up for the full documentary hypothesis, the JEPD. I'm not saying that. I'm telling you I'm going to introduce you to what the leading scholars in the world say. Now, many of you have heard about this, you know, like that the Torah was put together over a long period of time by a series of authors, but most people only have an inkling of what the theory says. Most people believe, this is the way they describe it, that E uses Elohim and J uses Jehovah, and that's their understanding of it, and that's not true. You say, yes, it is. No, it's not. That is not the distinction. It's only a part of what the scholars say. It does have to do with the name, but it's very specific. I'm going to give you one taste of this, but it's not my class today. And only because I saw, as a participant on the outside, one of the people on United Israel's Facebook group page made a comment. She was asking for help concerning reconciling two places in the Bible. And one of them was this. If you go with me to Exodus chapter 6, this is the kind of question we're going to get into. Exodus chapter 6, verse 2. Exodus 6, 2. By the way, Marianne, I saw your question. Get ready. It's coming. Exodus 6, 2 says, and God spoke to Moses. By the way, in the Hebrew, it says, Vayedaber Elohim el Moshe. And Elohim spoke to Moses and said to him, I am Jehovah, Ani Yehovah, and I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob by the name God Almighty. but by my name, Jehovah, I was not known to them. That's pretty plain. Pretty plain. It says, hey, Abraham, I am Jehovah, but they didn't know me as hey, Moses, I'm Jehovah, but the forefathers didn't know me as Jehovah. They knew me as El Shaddai. Now, what Marianne saw is what many other people saw. She goes back in the Bible and she finds place after place after place where it says, and Jehovah spoke to Abraham, and Jehovah this, and Jehovah that. In fact, go with me to Genesis chapter 4 and verse 6. Chapter 4 and verse 26. Then men began to call upon the name of Jehovah. Genesis chapter 4, verse 26 says that, I'm talking in the days of Seth, people called on the name of Jehovah, and Exodus chapter 6, verse 2 says they didn't know it. Now, you will be blown away at the answers that are given by the fundamentalist. Because what does a fundamentalist want to do? They are maintaining the position that most of us maintained 10 20, 30 years ago, that I have the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me God. And my way is the right way. And I'm not listening. And so they come up with all sorts of things. It's called apologetics. It is the art of where people will go to substantiate their view, even in the face of difficulties presented by the text themselves. So how is it that Exodus chapter 6 and verse 2 says that God wasn't known by the name Jehovah by the forefathers, but he was called El Shaddai? Well, listen, this has to do with part of what the documentary hypothesis covers. We'll talk about that later, not now. We're going to get into textual criticism, not skepticism. I want you to get this difference. We are going to look critically at the text. We're going to talk about, are there variant readings in this particular text, and what are those readings? One of the things that I want to draw attention to is just like we did with the 10 words, where we're comparing this text with that text. I want to look closely at those variant readings. I want to look at why is it that in one place in the Torah, it says that God, it was God's idea to send spies into the land. And in another text, it doesn't say that at all. It says rather not that God's idea, but it says that the people approached Moses. Which one is it? Now, again, the fundamentalist will pull the two together, conflate them, and come up with a story. I want to look at this and be honest to Moses. I want to be honest in everything that I do and I teach. I want to take a close and careful examination of the text. We're going to be respectful. We're going to be guided by a reverence for heaven, but we're not going to hold back. We're going to look at things in honesty. We just did a 15-part series on the 10 words. Don't you think we ought to be honest in our assessment of the Scriptures? I think we should. By the way, I'm a fundamentalist, but I'm an informed fundamentalist. And you are too. And you will be even more so if you choose to accept the mission that I'm presenting to you, if you choose to participate in this study. Now look, for some, this is too much. People say, look, I'm happy. I already went through difficulties to get here. I don't want to look at any more issues. Leave me be. But I have a commitment. I have basically made an oath that I'm going to find the truth no matter what. I don't care what it is. I don't care what difficulty it brings my way. My quest began as a search for truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I will not now apply a different method than I did before. Same rules apply. We're going to treat with respect, but we're going to be treating things fairly. This series, I promise you, will be a challenge. You don't know how long I have considered launching into this and said, nope, not yet. There are many things that I have studied that I have been burning to share with people, but I didn't want to do it for one reason. I didn't want to hurt anybody. And you know what? I still don't want to hurt anyone. I want to help. Sometimes the truth hurts. Sometimes we have to face difficulties in life and in our search, our quest. But the end of that is bringing us to a better place. It's my job as a teacher to teach. I have to create before you the idea. In order to bring you to a new place, what I have to do is present a vision of a better place. I have to show you that you've already done this before. I have to convince you that the new goal is achievable. These are all these things I learned in leadership over the years. But it wasn't for the military. It wasn't for industry that I learned these things. God was preparing me for a role as a teacher, I think. I think that's the only reason I've ever learned anything. I don't want to hurt you, and I'm going to be respectful. I'm not going to just... You've already heard how I say, don't mistreat people who are coming from where you were. So I'm going to be the same thoughtful person as I present new material now. Every one of you have successfully navigated a very difficult, challenging, and trying of your faith. You know how I know that? Because if it were not so, you would not be listening to me today. I have one person in this room with me now. One. Camera zoomed in tight. I sometimes pack the house with four people in the flesh. People are logging in from around the world. We draw a larger audience from around the world, but we are a drop in the bucket. People in this town know me. They know I study the Bible. They know that I go to Israel all the time. They know that this is what I live, eat, breathe, but they don't come here. You know why? Scared. They don't care what I know because whatever it is pulled me out of where they're at. In their view, I have fallen from grace. I've fallen away. So I have a question for you today in my introduction. Have we all traded one form of fundamentalism for another? Have we simply moved our fundamentalist view from a Greek text to a Hebrew one? Have we simply moved from one book to the other, but brought with us all the baggage from our previous journey? Have we made assumptions imposing non-biblical views on the text? Have we said that the Torah is something it is not? Do we hold views from the fundamentalists that we now look to? Have we taken on their views now? Have we traded our preacher's views for our rabbi's views, to put it plainly? Look, this is going to be a challenge. I almost didn't do it. But I know that if we do this together, we will refine our understanding to a new place. We will be more oriented towards the search for truth that we set out on. I plan to answer many questions that exist, but that most people are scared to ask. And I'm going to be honest to Moses. I'm going to be answering questions that people are afraid to ask, and even more are afraid to answer. There's no doubt in my mind that other Bible teachers have seen the stuff that we're going to get into. You know why they don't do it? You know why they don't talk about it? It's the same reason in this world that it was in your former world. A lot of it has to do with money. If we upset somebody, they're going to quit giving. Look, I was very apprehensive at the beginning of this journey for me. I remember becoming aware of the questions concerning textual criticism of the Hebrew Bible, and I didn't want to go anywhere near it. I'd already been through that. It was painful. I didn't want to. Here's what I thought. Oh my goodness, what if I discover similar things that I saw there in my former walk? I don't want to do it. I can't do it. I can't. I'm not able to do it. That was my original thinking. And then I said, wait a minute. What did I set out to do here? You know, Christian New Testament scholars have spent a lot of time dealing with text, looking for what is the core element, what are those core fundamental initial strata of text. You know, they search for the historical Jesus and so forth. What a lot of people, these fundamentalists do, they look at their former walk and they say, I don't have anything to do with that. That was proven wrong, and I'm nothing of value there at all. I'm gone, throw it away. They move to the Hebrew Bible and they become the hardcore fundamentalists that they were, but they've got a new position now. And now they look at the same thing, or the same way, but a different thing. And what I'm suggesting and what I'm telling you that I decided to do was to look at, with the same focus, look at the Hebrew Bible like I did the other. I was scared at first, I'll be honest. What if I found problems? I mean, where do you stop? I've even had good friends say, don't go there, don't go there, don't you bring people there. Well, I had a choice before me. I had a decision to make. And today, I'm here to tell you that my decision is this. When I was faced with the challenge of becoming a new kind of fundamentalist and become a new kind of fundamentalist Torah teacher, and teach all the traditions of men and all of the extra biblical explanations trying to make sense of things. I could either be that and be a good one. I believe that. I'm not being boastful. I'm telling you, if I would have chosen to be a card-carrying, approved, stamped, sealed, and blessed by a certain group, I could be right in that world, probably reaching a much bigger audience. As long as I fell under the authority of the fundamentalist faction which was in control. That didn't sound too good to me. See, I kind of have a streak in me that says, by God, whatever it says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to learn it. I'm going to go by that. I'm going to look at all the evidence before me, and that's the path I'm taking. I'm taking the hard road and not the easy road. I'm taking the way of truth and not the way of falsehood. I'm not going with the majority because it's popular, because I could get rich. I'm going with truth. The second question was, but what about everybody else? Do they have to go with you? I mean, couldn't you just do that in your spare time and teach us that fundamentalist, Bible-thumping, Hebrew Bible-thumping, fundamentalist, hard right view that it's the holy, inspired, authoritative, inerrant? Couldn't you just do that with us and you do your own thing? And the answer to both of these is, I have to do what I feel led to do. There's a great risk involved, as you might guess, because some people prefer the fundamentalist view. And I'm going to challenge that. Now, and like everything that I present, it's not a matter of being forceful on people, but it's going to be encouraging in that I invite you to join me as we go through the text and consider things you might not have considered. Or, as in Mary Ann's case on the Facebook group, she has a question. Why does this say this and this say that? There could be a perfect answer that justifies and validates both. Or maybe not. You see, I'm obligated to share truth as I understand it, and I'm driven to do this. My faith is stronger now, and I believe more refined to, let's call it, biblical truth than it was. And I believe that should you stay with me in this journey, yours will be as well. As we work through the study, we will correct misinformation, we'll refine our understanding, we're going to face difficult questions, and we're going to reach some sound conclusions. So if anyone is still with me, I've got to go through a few passages to set up for next week. The Hebrew word, Torah, occurs more than 200 times in the Hebrew Bible. 214 verses to be exact in all of its forms. Torah, 214 verses, 54 of which occur in the Torah alone. It does not mean law. Torah does not mean law. The Hebrew, more accurately defined, means teaching, instruction, direction. It's based upon the Hebrew root verb yara, yod, resh, hey, and it means basically to throw, to shoot, or to point. Yara. Yara means to throw, to shoot, to point. Every time you see it being used, it has to do with direction. Like if I throw something, I'm aiming, hopefully, right? If I intend to hit something and I throw, I'm aiming. If I shoot a bow and arrow in the biblical case, or a gun in my case, like this, like my Masada pistol made in Israel, if I do that, the idea is that I aim. That's the idea. It deals with direction. And so Torah means direction. The Hebrew word for teacher, by the way, is more, and more is it's tied to that root. It's built off of that root, yara. Let me give you an example. Go with me to Leviticus 10, Leviticus 10, verse 11. Leviticus 10, 11, just so you kind of get an idea of a form of this word. 10:11 says, let me find the beginning of the verse in Hebrew. That you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which Jehovah has spoken to them by the hand of Moses. That word teach begins ul horot. It's from the root word yara, and to teach. In other words, this group is being told that you are to provide direction for the children of Israel. A teacher, the hifil conjugation of the verb of yara, is to teach, meaning very literally to give direction, right? You want to make sure that someone is following the direction. So Torah is instruction, direction, teaching. It is not law. It's used in several ways. Quickly, look with me to Leviticus chapter 6. Torah is used in a variety of ways. Leviticus chapter 6 and verse 7 says, Vizot Torot amincha. This is the Torah of the mincha. The meal offering is usually the way that's translated. So, but you see, when I say zot torot, that people say, wait a minute, that's a different word. That's not Torah. No, when you see the tav ending torot, it means Torah of. It's in the construct state. So it's the word Torah. This is the Torah of the mincha, the meal offering. Look at chapter 7, verse 1. I'm going to show you that there are different Torahs. 7, verse 1. And this, v'zot Torat ha'asham. This is the Torah of the asham, which is usually translated as a guilt offering. But see, these are different Torot. It's a different Torah. A Torah of this, a Torah of that. These Torah is used in the Torah quite often to indicate a specific Torah. You follow that? There are specific Torot that deal with instructions pertaining to something very specific. So, for instance, in Numbers chapter 6, verse 21, it says, this is the Torah of the Nazir, the Nazirite. You go, well, which Torah is it? Well, I'm talking to you today about the Torah of the Nazir. You go, but I thought the Torah was about the Asham. Yeah, well, there's a Torah about the Asham too. You see, the use is that there are specific Torot. There are many, many, many other examples of this. So, but besides these very specific references, these Torot, look with me. I'm going to go through some Psalms because I want you to be ready for next week. Go to Psalm 1. I'm going to go through these pretty quickly. Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scorners, but his delight is in the Torah of the Lord. His delight is in the Torah of Jehovah. And in his Torah, he meditates day and night. Now look, I don't believe this is talking about the Torah of the Nazir necessarily, or a specific Torah. This is referring to something else. We're talking about, blessed is the man who has his delight in the Torah of Jehovah. What is the Torah of Jehovah? These are some of the questions we're going to get into. Look at chapter 19, Psalm 19, and verse 7, verse 8 in the Hebrew. The Torah of Jehovah is perfect or complete. Torah Jehovah Tamina. Tamima. The Torah of Jehovah is perfect, restoring the soul. Go to Psalm 78. I just have a few of these marked down. I want to kind of build this up. Psalm 78 and verse 1. Psalm 78, 1. Give ear, O my people, to my Torah. What are we talking about here? My Torah. The reason I'm talking this course on Torah and being very general and using one word is because we're going to get into questions like, is the Torah of Jehovah the same as the Torah of Moses? Is there a different Torah? Are we talking about a single document and so forth and so on? Look with me to Psalm 94. And verse 12, blessed is the man whom you dost chasten, O Jehovah, and teach him out of your Torah. Again, what is the Torah of the Lord? Now go with me to the longest psalm, to Psalm 119. This psalm, as many of you know, is an acrostic, meaning that there are 22 stanzas with 8 verses each. And each of the stanzas contains 8 verses, all beginning with the subsequent letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So verses 1 through 8 begin, every first line of every verse begins with the letter Aleph. And you go to the second stanza, and it's Beit. And there are 8 verses that all begin with Beit. Look at this in a Hebrew Bible. It's absolutely beautiful. It's about the Torah. Read this all in your own time. I'm just going to go through and pick out a few verses. Psalm 119:1. Happy are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the Torah of Jehovah. Look at verse 18. The Torah of Jehovah, by the way. Pay close attention to this. In Hebrew, Gale nai vavita niflot mitoateka, open my eyes that I may look for wonderful things out of your Torah. Psalm 119:18. Look at verse 29. Remove from me the way of falsehood and graciously bestow thy Torah upon me. Look at verse 34. Verse 44. Verse 44, and I will walk at liberty, so shall I keep your Torah continually forever and ever, so, and I will walk at liberty, for I seek your precepts. 51, verse 51, this is my comfort in my affliction, for thy word has revived me. The proud have had me greatly in derision, yet I've not declined from thy Torah. Wonder what this is talking about. We're going to get into this. 53, horror has taken hold of me because of the wicked who forsake your Torah. Verse 55, I have remembered your name, O Jehovah, in the night and have kept your Torah. Verse 61, I made haste and delayed not to keep thy commandments. Bands of wicked men have robbed me, but I have not forgotten thy Torah. 70, verse 70, the heart is gross like fat, but I delight in thy Torah. Verse 72, the Torah of thy mouth is better to me than thousands of gold and silver. I'm not going to read all these. I still have about 15 just in Psalm 119. Do a search. Look up Torah and do a search. What I'm suggesting is that something here seems to be referring to something quite specific, but it's not the same as what we saw perhaps in the Torah of the leper or the Torah of the Asham or the Torah of... This seems to refer to something else. Now, what is it? What about this? Go with me to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2. Same text, basically, a couple of textual variants, but the same basic text is in Micah 4. It's interesting that they don't agree, that there are differences between Isaiah 2 and Micah 4. But Isaiah chapter 2, verse 2, "And it will come to pass in the last days that the mountain of Jehovah's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all the nations shall flow into it. And many people shall go and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of Jehovah, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his path. For out of Zion shall go forth Torah." Isaiah 8, verse 16 through 20, I'm just going to hit these quickly, talks about a time in which there is darkness and gloominess in the earth, and people will, those who are seeking, what are they going to do? Look to the Torah and the testimony. Look at Isaiah 42 and verse 4. Isaiah 42 and verse 4. Now, this is talking about the servant. This is one of the servant songs. Isaiah 42, verse 4. "He shall not fail nor be discouraged till he have set judgment in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his Torah." What's the Torah of the servant? Huh. Or who is his? Who is his in this particular passage? Look down at verse 21. Isaiah 42, look at verse 21. "The Lord Jehovah was well pleased for his righteousness' sake to magnify Torah." Yigdil Torah. "And to make it glorious." Look at Isaiah 51. Isaiah 51. In verse 4. "Hearken to me, O my people, and give ear to me, O my nation, for Torah shall proceed from me, and I will make my judgment suddenly for a light of the peoples." Torah is going forth. Look at verse 7 of Isaiah 51. "Hearken to me, you that know righteousness, the people in whose heart is my Torah." Torah in the heart? What does that look like? I don't know, but let's look at this. I'm going to hit a couple of these quickly. Go with me to Psalm 37, Psalm 37 and verse 31. Let's look at a couple of passages about a Torah in the heart. 37, verse 31. "The Torah of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall falter." While we're right here, look at Psalm 40, Psalm 40 and verse 9. "I delight to do thy will, O my God, and thy Torah is within my heart." Jeremiah 31 through 34 talks about, "Behold, days are coming, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, though I was a husband to them. But this is the covenant that I will make with them after those days. I will put my Torah in their heart." That passage deals with somehow an internalization of the Torah. The question is, what is the Torah? And not everyone accepted the Torah. Let's look at a couple more passages. Go with me to the book of Amos. The book of Amos, chapter 2. Amos chapter 2 and verse 4. "Thus says Jehovah, for three transgressions of Judah, I will turn away his punishment, but for the fourth, I will not turn away his punishment, because they have despised the Torah of Jehovah and have not kept his commandments, and their lies after which their fathers have walked have led them astray. I will send a fire upon Judah, and it shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem." Judah is being faulted here in Amos because they've not kept the Torah. Jeremiah chapter 3 says that Judah did worse than Ephraim in the same regard. Over and over and over, the prophets are speaking the words of Jehovah about people not adhering to the Torah. Look at Zephaniah. Zephaniah chapter 3. Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 4. Her prophets are worthless, treacherous persons. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary, and they have violently perverted Torah. I mean, it doesn't get any deeper than that. Jeremiah 8:8 is another text. We'll deal with this in another class, but it says, it says very specifically, why do we say that we are wise and the Torah of the Lord is with us when the lying pen of the scribes has made it into a lie? Look, this is a tough passage. People love to try to explain this away. It's not going away easily. It requires careful study and consideration. Why would Jeremiah say that? Why did Amos say what he said? Why did Zephaniah say what he said about this group of people who are supposed to be in charge violently perverting the Torah, if this is not an issue? Hosea tells us that those who handle the law don't even know it. It's been changed. People have changed. They interpret things wrongly. They create stories that aren't there. Look, we're talking about what does it say versus what people say it says. Look at Zechariah, Zechariah 7 and verse 12. Zechariah 7, 12. Let's go to verse 11. But they refused to hearken and turned a stubborn shoulder and stopped their ears that they should not hear. And they made their hearts an adamant stone lest they should hear the Torah and the words which Jehovah of hosts has sent in his spirit by the former prophets. Therefore, great anger came from the Lord of hosts. Go to Malachi. Malachi 4:4, or in Hebrew 3:22. Malachi 4:4, or in Hebrew 3:22. Remember the Torah of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, both statutes and judgments. Remember the Torah of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb concerning all Israel, statutes and judgments. What is the Torah of Moses? What is the Torah of Moses? We've talked about a Torah of the Asham. We've talked about a Torah of the Nazir. We've talked about a Torah of Jehovah. We talk about the Torah of Moses. Are all of these the same? Are they all found together? These are questions that I want to talk about in the course that I plan to present. Go with me to Deuteronomy 33. Deuteronomy 33 and verse 4. Moses commanded us a Torah. Moses commanded us a Torah. The inheritance of the congregation of Jacob. Torah tzivah lanu Moshe. I want to know, what was the Torah that Moses commanded us? What was it? There's a fundamentalist view. There's a fundamentalist view, and this is it. According to Pirkei Avot, Pirkei Avot, the ethics of the father, begins with this. It says, Moses received the Torah at Sinai and handed it on to Joshua. And Joshua handed it to the elders, and the elders handed it on to the men of the great assembly. That's the fundamentalist view. Moses wrote the Torah. by which they mean the five books, Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12. He gave it to Joshua, Joshua to the elders, elders to the prophets, prophets handed it on to the men of the great assembly, men of the great assembly, now the rabbis. And that's where you go in an unbroken chain to put you back at Sinai is what is being taught. The conclusion of the Torah reading service, this following phrase is chanted as the Torah is held up, the Haggabah, the lifting of the Torah, conclusion of the Torah service. V'zota Torah she'esam Moshe lifnei b'nei Yisrael al pi Adonai b'yad Moshe. That this is the Torah that Moses placed before the children of Israel and the Lord's commandment by the hand of Moses, by which they mean Genesis chapter 1:1 through Deuteronomy chapter 34:12. The eighth article of Maimonides of the 13 articles of faith says the following: the Torah is from heaven. The Torah we have today is the Torah that God gave to Moses at Sinai. This is the fundamentalist view. There are no differences between what we now possess and what was given at Sinai. That is the fundamentalist view. It is the view that many people have settled on and feel comfortable with and like to say as they chant these various phrases, sayings. The Talmud in Baba Batra 14b says, Moses wrote his own book, i.e. the Torah. Every letter. Some of you are familiar with the what we call the like the hidden, the Bible codes, where people suggest that the text that we now possess, Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12, is the holy, inspired, inerrant, authoritative word of God given from God to Moses, Moses to so forth and so on, and that every letter is perfect. It's inspired. They'll go so far as to say that there are no mistakes. When a spelling mistake exists, they'll use that opportunity to reveal some hidden secret. This is the fundamentalist, the apologist. Whenever we find places where things don't agree within the text, answers are given by the apologist and the fundamentalist, seeking to make those go away. What I am interested in doing is answering the question for real. I want to be honest to Moses. Question I have as I prepare you for next week's class, I want everybody there. Don't back out on me now. This is going to be informative. And I want you to answer this, think about it. What did Moses write? Now, we know what the fundamentalists say, but is that supported by the Bible itself? What did Moses write, and what did he not write? Now, when I get to the part about what did he not write, I'm not suggesting that those portions aren't inspired. I'm not going to talk about that. What I'm going to talk about is, let's first determine what did Moses write and what did he not write? And can we tell the difference? And I'm going to tell you now, yes, we can. You will be amazed. Should you choose to continue on this journey with me, I'm going to show you various voices and hands within the text of the Torah that are not Moses's. There, I said it. It's obvious. It's as clear as day. We're not left with guesswork. You'll be able to detect the true words of Moses within the text that he wrote. Questions that I also have before you: what is the perfect Torah? What is the perfect Torah that can revive the soul? What is the Torah that the isles wait for? What is the Torah that will go forth from Zion? What is the portion of the Torah which is eternal? By the way, where is the Urim and the Tumim? Anybody know? What about the Ark of the Covenant? The Torah has a lot to do with the Ark of the Covenant. It tells us how to make it and so forth and what it should look like. And depends on where you read. If you read the Tetrateuch, if you read Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, you learn about this one particular Ark of God made by Bezalel and Aholiab. If you read Deuteronomy, all you realize is that Moses made the Ark. Same ark, different ark? I don't know. We're going to have to answer that question. You read Jeremiah. Jeremiah says there's coming a day when you won't even ask about the ark. If we get to that day, are we going to read Exodus 25 where it describes the making of the ark? Can you imagine how that would go? You're sitting around in a Torah study in the Olam Haba, and you're reading the Torah, and someone says, okay, and the ark will be this big, and the rest of the people in the class would say, the what? Because Jeremiah says it won't even come to mind. What about war? Torah talks about war, what to do in war. What about when Isaiah's fulfilled comes through where it says there'll be no more war? Nation will not lift up sword against nation. They'll take their spears and pruning hooks and so forth and so on. How do you justify, how do you suggest that that part of the Torah, which deals with warfare, that won't even be part of the new world, is that going to be carried into the new world? Divorce, is divorce going to happen? Are we going to have leprosy? Are we going to need sacrifices and offerings? Did we ever need sacrifices and offerings? Look, these are difficult subjects, but are questions that you probably have had. But you didn't ask them, or you did, or you didn't know who to ask them. Or if you thought you had an answer, you were afraid to tell anybody. Hey, let's get real. Y'all want to get real with the Bible? How many people out there today are willing to pursue truth with the same energy now to determine what is the Torah of Moses? Really, not the traditional apologetic view. There will be a lot of questions that we will ask and a lot of answers that will be given in this class, because the goal, again, I don't want anyone to be hurt or offended. What I want is for people to join me on a true and honest journey, a journey into the book of books on a quest for truth, for the Torah, the true Torah. Join me next week. Shabbat Shalom.